Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The man they call Barbershop played 10 years in the NFL, including three with the Chiefs.
I think that our defense is doing that at a higher level than any other team.
And even though they disagree on just about everything,
all of those things kind of got to be rewritten and thrown out the window. The trajectory for this team is not on the normal scale.
Sean Barber joins CDOT in studio right now on The Drive. Brought to you by Own KC.
Well, it's not CDOT. It's Jay Binkley with Chris Unocero. Barbershop. One of the cockiest men alive sitting in here. And by the way, outdoors, he was 60-37 in his career. In domes, he was 1-8.
I mean, I hated those domes.
You care to explain the dome problem?
Turf toe, man.
I told you it was the turf.
Turf monster.
I told you it was the turf.
Guys with natural speed.
You had no sacks in the dome. You had 10 outside.
I mean, I'm what you call a natural athlete. I like the outdoors. I like the wind. I like the wind behind my back. I like to fit. I like to feel the elements. In a dome, felt
it's
weird,
true,
man. Like
man,
a caged animal.
But Sean Barber, president of the Chiefs Ambassadors, who's still in his jersey because he just did a tour.
Yeah, man. Nice tour. VIP tour. The McGinnis Group. Obviously, you hear the commercial all the time with Matt McGinnis and myself, but we was able to get all our producers out to Arrowhead Stadium, do a nice little tour, man. Stopped at all the hot spots, saw the locker room and the touchdown club, and got to go down the tunnel and be introduced and go on the field. All the great things that comes with a nice VIP tour, being a part of that McGinnis Group. So.
And you get to go with Sean Barber.
And you get to go with Sean Barber because I work there. You know, it's like the hair club, right? Not only the president, but I'm a member.
Well, Barbershop, we had this thing we're doing here, and it's called Survivor League. And a lot of people picked you.
I hope
people picked me, though, to be honest.
More people did pick you. I'm still, listen.
They shouldn't have. But
I don't understand that. How, like, if I won it last year, why would people, I should have had
I'm giving you all
landslide.
Credit.
It should have been a landslide of people picking me to win this year. But
Chris gave you a ton of credit before on other picks you've had. I gave you a ton of credit because I know that you turned this list in, like, before the season.
Yep. Yeah, I did adjust.
But you have COVID rules. Like if somebody's out with COVID or something, you do make an exception.
In 11 weeks, I've adjusted four of the picks because my quarterback got hurt or the opponent's team I was going against quarterback got hurt or something happened with COVID. It was a weird year. But, yeah, going into this week, I was left with a bunch of do I go with Seattle with how they've been playing, facing a tough Washington team at the – the Washington football team. The Bears, I had the Bears on there for a while. That's my, week 12 pick. But then without Justin Fields and Dalton, do I go with Dalton over, at Detroit?
Should go with the Lions, man. Believe in Thanksgiving. A 37-42-1 on Thanksgiving, man.
I threw all that out the window, and I went with my heart. So I basically called my wife and asked her, of these three games, which one should I went with? And she said, Barbara, I think you're going to have to go ahead and go with your old team.
She calls you Barber?
Barber.
Your wife calls you Barber?
Barber.
Really?
Because she's serious. Everything between is serious. So, Barber.
It said like Honey Love or something. She calls you Barber.
She don't have a nickname. She's like, baby, nothing. She said Barber.
After a while, you get, we're not newlyweds. We've been down this road a lot, so.
But still.
Let's stick with Barber.
What'd you say in the wedding day? I take this Barber.
What is Chris White? What does your wife call you?
Oh, I got a girlfriend. She calls me Chris. Or Babe. She calls me Babe a lot.
It's Baby, man.
How long she never says my last name.
How long y'all been together?
2 years.
Okay, well, we're going on 18, 19, so after a while.
She just refers to you by your last
Barber.
Name?
which is also her last name.
So I'm saying that's weird. Like, and that's your kids too. So like,
sooner or later you'll be able to give a girl that gift.
So what if you are around the rest of your family and she is she says Barber.
Barber.
Do you all look up?
No, just me. I'm Barber.
Just you. You're Barber. That's it.
You call her Mrs. Barbershop.
I'm the alpha. Nah. I think I call her a bunch of like, Coleo and Sweetheart and.
So it's only her that's using the Barber last name.
Barber.
I've got all your splits.
I stay in trouble a lot sometimes. So
that's like, why, yeah.
I've got all your splits in front of me, Barber. But I don't have Thanksgiving. How many Thanksgiving Day games you play in?
Two? I don't have
all
no
idea. Philly?
I have no idea. No, I mean.
You don't remember how many Thanksgiving Day games you played?
The NFC East years, I would say. Somewhere in those years between 4 years with the Redskins and 2 years with the Eagles, I must have played one or two, right? Because the Cowboys
Dallas
are on
there.
Yeah. Right, Dallas on there. But I really don't know.
You never got the turducken?
No. I never came close. I thought I was always at home. Like, so I'm a very funny, like, Thanksgiving guy. I don't eat any of the main courses. I'm all sides.
What?
I don't want your deep-fried turkey. I don't want your oven-fried. I don't want your baked ham. I'm done with the meats. I don't get the meat sweats, all right? I'm done with the meats. I love some really nice prepared sides.
Here's a current NFL player, Matthew Judon of the New England Patriots. Here's what he had to say.
We got to get macaroni and cheese off the table.
He all crazy.
Right, guys. It's just cheese and noodles. All right, I'm going up. I'm getting on my soap opera. It's just cheese and noodles.
He said soap opera.
And it's not that good. Let's be honest, guys. Everybody's probably here. It's a little lactose, so it mess up our stomachs. And we got to get it off the table. It's probably one of the most overrated dishes. Mm. But my favorite is dressing. I do love dressing.
All right, so that's where he lost me right there.
But get a macaroni and cheese off the table, and it'd be a much better Thanksgiving for everybody in the house.
He's having a great year. Evidently, the Patriots were asked a lot about this. Mac Jones doesn't like apple pie. And Belichick likes potatoes. I didn't know he'd answer that question, but he did. But your thoughts on Judon not liking macaroni and cheese?
Now, Judon has a special place in my heart because we're both represented by the same sports agent.
Oh, really? Still? Even after that comment?
100%. You don't get kicked out of the family just because you make a comment like that. But he's represented by sports stars, Alan Herman and Brian Mackler.
I'm sure it's fine on the field, Sean, but macaroni and cheese, man.
I like a macaroni. My wife makes a mean macaroni and cheese, like, you know, 3-4 different noodles, like 7-8 different cheeses. Like, that's why I think he's just been exposed to the basic. And so maybe he don't like it because he said, like, it's just cheese and noodles. If that's the way someone has made it for him, then it's a reason he don't like it.
I put buffalo sauce on it. Is that weird?
I
love it.
My youngest son, Cade, he puts the buffalo, that Frank's hot.
Yeah, you put that on macaroni?
He puts that on everything.
Yeah.
Don't talk to him about no ranch is the best salt. No, he puts that buffalo hot sauce on
Chris
everything.
Chris tells me you don't play around with the
you
mac and cheese.
You can't mess around with that mac and cheese, man. That's like one of the most important parts about Thanksgiving. It's a staple. If you can't get mac and cheese right, whoever is in charge of that, because there's generally someone that is in charge of the mac and cheese. Like, that's their job. That's your role right here. You know, your job is to make sure you get that mac and cheese right. If you mess it up, you lose those privileges very quickly.
Well, like I said, man, I'm a all size guy, so my wife and my family, they do a great job of making all the sides. We go down the list, man, the green bean casserole, the corn pudding, man.
What the hell is corn pudding?
I don't even know what that is.
It's a dish from the South. My mom makes a glorious one, but, you know, my family, they try to recreate it as best they can just to make me feel like I'm at home.
Really? What is it?
It's corn, and it's like what you whip it and put it in a casserole thing. It creates like a little souffle.
Oh, I've had that. Yeah. I'm not a fan of it.
Some people think it tastes kind of like coal on the bottom.
Yeah.
But that's because they didn't make it right.
I'm not a fan of that stuff.
So you're not turkey or ham or anything like that?
Once you had ham, I mean, how many different ways? It is what I just pass on that. Like, I like the, again.
So you just stuff it. Do you guys have like rolls or croissants there?
Yeah, I like a nice dinner roll.
Yeah, you got your little roll. Which kind of rolls do you get? Is it like homemade?
What's the
King's
one?
Hawaiian?
No, man, the one that comes, the mama, it's like a blue and white bag. They come frozen.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Oh, yeah.
Those dinner rolls.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Mama somebody.
Yeah, I don't remember. But I think we might have some at home, actually.
Those things beast.
Yeah, they are good. They are good. I know what you're talking about.
Man, I just thought that Judon was a little bit crazy.
He is crazy.
Listen, like, all right.
Like, there's takes and there's yeah. obviously bad takes. And
he just had a moment because he couldn't even get the lactose intolerant part in it.
He said, I'm going to get off my soap opera.
So there was a lot of faux pas in there, little some things in there that he was trying to get out. But
somebody,
like I said,
his family has been making that Kraft mac and cheese or the Velveeta mac and cheese with just the shells and the cheese, but they don't put no butter in there. They don't bake it. They just make it in the pot and they just stir it on the stove. Like, if you don't have it baked, because I got one of our co-hosts here, Dusty Likens, last year around Thanksgiving, I told him, I was like, dude, get you some baked mac and cheese. Mm-hmm. Make real mac and cheese with the shells, not the elbow macaroni.
Yeah, the real thing.
And you got to put a bunch of cheese on there, butter in there, and just bake it. And I'm telling you, especially if it's got that nice crust on top there.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect. Just perfect. That's the kind of mac and cheese you got to have. If it's like, if it's all runny and if it's that Kraft stuff or the shell stuff, no. You got to get the real legitimate mac and cheese.
Yeah, because day two is always the best.
Leftover mac and cheese is good.
Thanksgiving dinner itself is kind of overrated. It's the day after. When all the ingredients have absorbed all the flavor overnight, it's all like all soaked and you warm it up. Oh my goodness.
What'd you do when you play? Did you have your teammates over and stuff?
Nah. I keep my family tight. My circle's real small when it comes to breaking bread. This real like immediate family. I like to share like this is my wife and kids. When I played, when I was the Eagles, I think I went to Troy Vincent's house one time. Troy Vincent would have like a bunch of guys come over who were like, you know, when I played in Philly, sometimes I wasn't living in Philly. So he would have out of towners if you was, you know, come over to his house or whatever. So we did that one time. Obviously when I was down in Houston, Texas, my man Indy Kalu, I think we had it over at his house one time when I was down in Houston. So that's what we do when you're an out of town guy. Sometimes one of the vets will open up their house and have you come break some bread with them. Or actually, it might have been a pastor. I think that the team chaplain, Rev Chap down there. You remember? So do you remember we had a chaplain named Chap here in Kansas City. He actually was, his hometown was from Houston, Texas. And when I think Pioli and them came in, they kind of got rid of that chaplain job for a little bit. He went back home and became the chaplain for the Texans. And that's when I went down there. So I kind of knew him from Kansas City. He was, man, a blessing to my family while we was in Houston.
Good stuff. Sean Barber's with us. We got the macaroni and cheese talk out of the way because I just wanted to hear what he thought about Judon.
Somebody said spaghetti sauce with mac and cheese.
I didn't realize the
don't
same
you
agent.
Do it.
Don't you disrespect don't do Thanksgiving like that by putting no spaghetti sauce on your mac and cheese.
That sports star's family say he's tight, though. Anthony Sherman was a sports star guy. Juan Thornhill. I mean, we generational, man. You talk about the goats of agencies, man, you got to go with that sports stars. That's the way you don't ever go wrong.
Except if I'm the agent, I'm putting the correction on that one, though.
Sports stars.
Putting the correction on the mac and cheese take, man. I don't care.
Hey,
you are.
But like, he's been balling, though.
You can't be wrong.
Whatever he's been eating or not eating,
it's working.
It's working for him. Like, because this joker is.
Gross.
You talking about show up, show out.
Yeah, it was a great pickup for the Patriots.
Somebody said craft or nothing on the text line. I'm thinking about blocking this.
Hey, go ahead and do that. We'll take a timeout. We come back, though. I want to talk Chiefs with Sean Barber. Like, how surprised is he? Because I don't think he's real surprised at what's going on with the Chiefs right now, that they were always going to be this team. We'll talk about that next.
Got to get angry. You got to get mean. That's the only way you can play.
You're listening to former Chiefs linebacker Sean Barber on The Drive, brought to you by Own KC.
Welcome back to The Drive. Jay Binkley, Kristen Osero, Sean Barber, the Barbershop, in with us. Stop hitting people in your car, man. Everybody's got somewhere to go on Thanksgiving. Just take it easy, man. You'll get there.
Tell them, slow down. Just be easy, man. Slow down, be easy.
Put your radio on. Just listen to it and chill, man. We got you for a while. But Sean, one of the things I've been talking about on the post game is because everybody's wanting to talk about the Chiefs being back. And I get it, man. Listen, like I treat the COVID like injuries or anything else. You're out of player, you're out of player. This is what happens, you know, this far into the season. Yeah. You're going to be without players. That's the bottom line. There's a whole bunch of excuses of who the Chiefs are beating, but they're beating them. But I've always contended that they're not back. And that's what he's meant with, ooh. I don't think they ever went anyplace because that offense was number two in NFL in efficiency before that Titans game. They just went through their slumps at times because, you know, guys do have their slumps. But, you know, Vegas right back with the Chiefs, you know, and then the AFC, second biggest, best odds to go to the Super Bowl. But do you think they're back or do you think they ever went anywhere?
Man, I guess if you go with my – analysis week by week with Carrington on Thursdays when we talked about who's who in the AFC. I mean, I consistently kind of just told him, like, it's the Chiefs and everybody else. And he was like, you know, Barbara, how can you say that? You know, in week three, he was with the Raiders. And then 2 weeks later, in week five, he was with the Chargers. And then, you know, weeks five, seven through seven, he was with the Bills. And then it was the Tennessee Titans, you know, there, you know, before they lost to the Jets and before they lost to, I guess, the Texans last week. It was, you know, look at the rest of their schedule. You know, they don't have any, they're not going to lose another game. And I'm like, man, this is the NFL, man. Like, if you play a team, you got a chance to lose. Like, none of that stuff really, you can't add it up that way. There is no gimmies. There is no free weeks. There is no weeks you can take it off and coast through and think you're going to win. The NFL, by far, is full of high-level alpha athletes. Every team got them. Now, the Chiefs got a little bit more than the average. They got a little bit more of that top tier when you talk about Cheetah, the wide receiver, when you talk about our tight end, Kelsey, when you talk about our quarterback. And those three positions on offense, I mean, it doesn't get any better right now. Offensive line as a totality, as they play together, because they're so young, no one can really know what their best is. You see them each week. I mean, Creed, I've been speaking about him since, right, preseason. I went up to Arrowhead. I mean, I went up to training camp, and I saw him in inside blitz period pickup. Saw him go through a blitz drill, and I realized he got it. Now, did I know he had it like a all-pro, or did I know he had it like, you know, is he going to be one of the best? No, I didn't know. Like, I just know he was above the average center. His weight distribution, his balance, the way he punched, the strength in his hands. He never was in a hurry or a rush. He always was calm and under control. And then once he got you leaning the wrong way, he could finish you. That's really all you need on the offensive line. You need guys that are confident in their ability. They know what they know, but then they got that tenacity. When you make a mistake, they know when to pull the punch, when to strike and finish you. And he got it. He got all of those things, and he got a lot of that. I didn't really know what, you know, Orlando Brown was going to look like. I know he played, you know, right tackle for a team to run the ball a lot, but how was that going to transfer to being a, you know, left tackle from Pat Mahomes? A much deeper drop, a little bit more variation of where he ends up in the pocket. So that was going to be a X factor. That was going to be an unknown. We knew he was going to get with Thuny, right? We knew he brought a history of blocking for one of the most prized possessions in New England. So you knew he was going to get something there. And then the young man from Tennessee, right? If the medication and all that worked out, on film, he was a dog. On film, he was an alpha. On film, he was a first-round draft pick. But everybody was concerned about the medical. The Chiefs took a chance. They rolled the dice. They got the meds right. And now he's out there balling, finishing guys off, being a mauler, doing what he does. And now the only question is kind of that right tackle position. Through some injuries, Niang, how he's going to finish up. So we still got some question marks when it comes to the Chiefs.
Well, the two guys that really flashed to me, because you're asked about that when you're in training camp, like who's the best player there? And I would always say Chris Jones, because James Palmer from NFL Network said he talked to Veach, and Veach said he's having the best camp. He did. It was Chris Jones. Like, he's already good, but he was just doing some things that were just blowing me away every time I'm watching him. Going inside and outside. The guy in offense, it was Creed, but it was also Trey Smith. I brought Brian Baldinger on, who played the game as well. And I asked him about Trey Smith.
I mean, Trey Smith's got Hall of Fame potential. I mean, that's how you play
really?
The game. I mean, he's that good. You know, he's got a...
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
like a little bit off his fastball, just trying to drill everybody into the turf every down and, you know, finesse a little bit more maybe in pass protection. You know, his holding calls yesterday were simply just trying to kill people. And so there's a time to do that and set that tone. And then there's a time when the Zebras are just looking at the finish of the play. They don't see the whole thing, and they throw the flag out of the pocket. But, I mean, I wouldn't want to take any aggressiveness away from him.
You played linebacker in the league. If you knew you were playing the Chiefs offensive line, because Trey Smith, he's got a little bit of that Clutchio simile in him, and what I mean is just nasty. Just hurts you. Pink. He's a nice guy in the field, off the field. Trey Smith's one of the nicest guys. And by the way, he did have all the draft hats because I think he was going to go a lot further because they give him to like the first three rounders. He didn't. I think he was the best pick of Brett Veach considering the value he was at. Now, LeJarius Sneed, we can make that argument because he's fourth rounder. But Trey Smith was in the sixth rounder. But he's got this disposition when he plays football. He wants to punish you. He didn't care if his helmet flies off or whatever. But be honest with you. If you're playing the Kansas City Chiefs, when you played in Washington and Philly and Houston and whatever, and you're playing the Chiefs, and you know you got Creed Humphrey, Orlando Brown, Tooney, Niang, Rimmers, or Wiley at that point, or Trey Smith, who are you fearing the most?
I mean, that's a tough question to ask me, obviously, on the football field. That word fear does not – probably don't mean the same thing to me that it means that most people,
Sure. Right?
It's not about running. It's not forgetting everything and run. It's facing everything and rise. And so when you talk about fear, the likelihood of me holding back on any of those linemen would be near and none. Now, I do have that jailhouse mentality. I do have the – like, let me pick the biggest, baddest dog – and in the first couple snaps, I'm going to slap him first so that everybody else on the line knows that I ain't one to be played with.
But he seems like the guy that'll slap you too.
That's fine. We can go back. Like again, on defense, I can pull my point. I know exactly what plays I need to be a part of and which plays I don't. Now, on offensive line, you worry about me too much, and then you let Willie Gay and Bolton go hit and kill your quarterback, then everybody going to be mad at you for picking – you know, picking fights.
We'll get to them in just a second. But, I mean, who's the guy that, honestly, who's the toughest dude on that line?
I would start with the center, man.
Like, Creed.
It all bases, that's the guy that snaps the ball. He starts to play. If there's on any offensive line, the guy I'm going to pick a fight with is going to be the center first. Because if I can get him thinking about me, worrying about me in the A-gaps, worrying about me blitzing down the center of him or something like that, if I can throw that snap count off a little bit, especially if you're going from the shotgun as much, if I can make that ball not rotate the right way and then have that quarterback got to find the laces a little bit more because this guy is overly worried about me, that's the position I want to bother the most. Now, I'm not saying that he's the alpha dog. I'm not saying he's the big man in the jailhouse that you got to, you know, set straight. But if you're asking me from a – I'm trying to win the ball game. So if there's one guy on the offensive line I want to worry about me as a linebacker, I always want to be able to impact and influence the center.
How good of a job is he doing considering everything that comes with it? I mean, here he is. He can stamp with both hands, obviously. That was the ambidextrous, and I had a little fun with that, too, because he can't stamp with both hands. I think that's pretty cool. He uses the left. But how difficult is that, being the quarterback at that offensive line? The job that he's doing, and he came from Oklahoma, right? He played with good quarterbacks, you know, Heisman-caliber quarterbacks, so he's no stranger to that. But Mahomes, different level. But you're the center for Patrick Mahomes, and you're part of what is this reconstructed offensive line. How much pressure is he dealing with?
Well, I think in Andy Reid's – anytime any team comes to an Andy Reid coach team, the one thing that you're going to be given on a daily basis is great coaching. And it's not because Andy is a great coach. Andy sets an environment, but he selects position coaches to do – they teach. Andy Heck is a great teacher because he knows what he's doing because he did it. He learned the way to play it, and even beyond his own skill set. Whether there were some things that probably as an athlete he couldn't do, but because a offensive line coach explained it to him with such detail and demanded it from the entire group, he realized that is the way to – that's the steps you're supposed to take. That's the process to get the product that you want to attain as an offensive line. And so what he's demanding from those guys is nothing beyond their skill set, but you got to come in ready to play hard-nosed, gritty, tough, smart football every snap of every ball game. You'll get beat sometime. As a unit, you'll get beat sometime. But they go out there and battle as a unit. It's all five. All five of them is like a hand. And they clinch together and form that fist. And they've got each other's back. I mean, you see that on the field. You see the way they scratch and claw for one another to keep our quarterback upright and how they finish off blocks as a unit to keep our running backs from getting cheap-shotted at the end of runs. There are some things, you know, I see some things on the game, at the end of a game or when a ball come loose, that I wish our offensive lineman was a little bit closer, finishing the play a little bit harder so they could be around, you know, that loose ball Parsons had against Mahomes. I get a little bit upset that our offensive line wasn't closer than their defense to recover the ball once it's there, because, man, balls get stripped all along, but it's not a turnover as long as you get it back. So loose balls I ain't really worried about, but it's those turnovers. It's when we lose a ball and then the other team recovers it. So it's a matter of just tenacity on both sides of the ball, D-line, O-line, always be scratching, clawing, always showing great effort and energy and that engine to be around the ball. So when that ball comes loose, you're there to pick it up.
Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with Orlando Brown. They could tag him or they could give him another contract. We don't know. But the bottom line is the core is going to be here until Mahomes is in his 30s. I mean, they are. How much better can they be? Like, in 2 years, even going to be talking about the offensive line? Even next year? I mean, once they've played a year together?
I mean, it's like, again, it's like the...
That line.
They're going to blow the roof off. I mean, I don't know what the perceived ceiling for that group is, but collectively, the more you play together, the more snaps the more things you see as a unit, right? The more different stunts up front, the more different ways defensive coordinators are trying to blitz and trick you, the more times you can experience that while in the line of fire, game day, not just in a classroom, not watching film together, but actually in the heat of battle, because that's when you're going to hear a guy's rally cry. That's when you're going to hear what it sounds like for a guy when the end cuts across his face. What noise is he going to make? How quickly is he going to call you to bounce, 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 step over, a bob, you know, a combo block? How quick is that call going to come out of his mouth, and how quickly are you going to react as the center or the guard? You just can't recreate it in a classroom. And so as a group, all five guys working together, game experience is going to be the one catalyst that ignites that group to just continue to rise. And they're going to all rise together, and they say, what? High tide raises all ships. All of these guys are ships in the water, and Pat is just like the high tide, man. He's just pouring more water. And I mean, it's not just the old line, the wide receivers, tight end, all ships rise when that high tide comes. And so I think we're gonna be in that phase of having a high tide here in Kansas City. I think from here until the end of the season.
That's number 59, Sean Barber. He's staying with us. We talked about the offensive line. We'll talk about the defense. We'll talk about Nick Bolton and Willie Gay when we come back.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Welcome back to The Drive, talking some football with Sean Barber, Jay Binkley, Kristen Osero. Talked a little Trey Smith, a little Creed Humphrey. Let's talk the defensive side. Let's talk some Nick Bolton, all right? I don't know how crazy I am, but I thought that this guy is going to go down like Derrick Johnson. This is the Chiefs' all-time leading tackler. Well, it's done because he's the most sure-handed tackler that I've seen with this team in a long time. Because when you watch him at Mizzou, when he hits somebody, he brings them down. Now, we've seen this playing time diminish a little bit the last couple of weeks. So, 28% of the snaps, 35%, 43% since that Giants game where he had 72% of the snaps. But Nick Bolton's a guy that I like watching play, and I think he's been a big reason for this defense, especially they're 16th against the run now. Yeah. They have completely flipped who and what they were against the run. Chargers sit back there now at 32. But Nick Bolton, your impressions on the rookie. And he's had some of his time limited, obviously, because of Hitchens and everything else. Just kind of the defensive scheme they're running. But just your impressions on the rookie Nick Bolton compared to the other rookies this team has on the offense.
Well, I think just on the defense side of the ball, it's this defense is a complicated defense for rookies. It has a lot of verbiage, has a lot of responsibilities. Obviously, with shifts in motions, your responsibilities change on the fly. And you got to know what you know. You got to be able to understand and know gap responsibility and know how we're going to evolve and change depending on what offense is doing to attack us, and then we counterpunch. So until you understand and seen that whole evolution, and it takes a whole season to ask a rookie to come in and be, you know, all knowing and understanding and play the mic position in this defense is almost impossible. But when thrust into that position, the man did a noble job. He did an outstanding job of see ball, get ball. when in doubt, be aggressive and have some energy and finish plays and be a great tackler. attack the ball, attack blockers. Don't worry about misdirection plays or counter plays or those kind of things. What your first instincts tell you to do, go do it, but do it in a pissed off manner. Do it in a manner that you wake people up. And so I think when taking the reins off of a young man, allowing him just to go see ball, get ball, and that's what he did for a few weeks. That's how he led to all those tackles for loss and making plays behind the line of scrimmage, because he wasn't worrying about the next step. He wasn't worrying about the reverse fake coming off of the pitch, you know, the run action. He was just going instinctively and making plays. And you see that with young players. What I think is happening, you know, as the season gets longer, is you just, you know, we understand this is going to be a season of attrition. And what you don't want to do is have guys playing too much to the point where we get to weeks 15, 16, and 17, and you got guys physically getting to the end of the road. So if you got an opportunity to rotate some young guys and allow Hitchens to get, you know, a few weeks off and get healthy and have Bolton play, and then have Willie Gay come in and play a couple, some spots of Neiman in there, and keeping that entire group as healthy as possible. Let them handle it. Let them handle the reps and get each other through it. So that at the end of the season, everybody is 85-95%. That's the win. Not having, you know, Nick Bolton have 10 tackles and 3 tackles for loss every week in the middle of the season. And then the other thing with a rookie is your body is not adjusted to the NFL. When you play college football, it's 10 weeks in a bowl game. So you're used to playing football for 10 weeks, taking 3 weeks off, playing a bowl game in some, you know, Aloha Bowl or Mobile City, Mobile One, T-Mobile Bowl or something like that.
What was your favorite bowl?
Richmond, we didn't play bowl. We you know, FCA. So I played the playoffs.
But you played the playoffs, yeah.
Playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had the playoffs, FCA, so I never got too far in those playoffs. But just like I said, the nature of your body, you get into the sync and rhythm of, you know, starting in September and you're done by Thanksgiving. So it's those 10 weeks that he's used to playing football. So I would be very cautious with him in the next few weeks and just let him, you know, not really try to push him on the amount of reps. Have some really special packages for him to play. Obviously, just making sure from a mindset that he's not getting behind in the depth of what we're doing defense, because we're still stacking on stuff. You consistently, continuously throughout the season, stack for 17 weeks, and then when it's time to get the playoffs, that's when you have a debriefing and you start pulling out the things that in 17 weeks worked really well, and you take those bullets and then you go into the playoffs. So we're still adding things to the defense. They're still making some adjustments, and you don't want him to get bogged down and overloaded by too much. So just keep him where he is. I like his snap. I think snap count last game was –
it's more limited because that rookie wall. Again, yeah. They have a couple of rookies that are hitting that wall, but also the veterans, they played the most football of anybody.
I like it.
Go to 2 straight Super Bowls and you go to 3 straight AFC title games, mean you're playing more football than any other team.
Yeah, but I think as a veteran, like in the offseason, you know what you're preparing yourself for. When you come from a college setting and then you go to the pros, you really don't know what your body's going to feel like after 10 weeks of football. So there's another reason this bye week is great for some of our young guys. It gives them a chance to really reset their bodies without going out there on Sunday and going through that battle. They can really reset their bodies and really start back over at week one with the proper rest, nutrition, hydration. Let their muscles really just absorb all that rest and really get back to playing like they did, you know, as far as a energy level, almost like it's week one. And I think that's going to last them throughout the end of this season.
Obviously, you played the position as well. Melvin Ingram could play linebacker or defensive end, depending on your 4-3 or 3-4. Could do some. He's a guy that I really wanted in the offseason. Andy Reid talks about sometimes you go out and get guys that just don't fit right away. But Frank Clark talked about the respect he always had for Melvin Ingram. And mm-hmm. He seems to be one of those guys that come in. You've probably seen these guys that come in, you know, midseason or whatever. They either have your respect or you don't. He's a guy that clearly has the respect. He drew that double team in Vegas where Jaren Reed got his sack. But what do you think the addition of he's meant, besides, you know, Chris Jones, you know, flexibility inside and outside, even though he did have 19 snaps still on the outside this last game, so he still hasn't, you know, definitively gone to the inside. But what about that addition to Ingram to this core and what he's meant to those guys?
Yeah, so I think that everybody has their niche of how they pass rush, how they affect the passer. And obviously, Frank Clark's a speed guy. I mean, he's a guy that's coming off the edge. He's a speed guy. He loves to do his double move. He goes in, fakes the in, and comes back around the outside. Call it the wheeling derby, kind of a whirly bird type move off the edge. So he's a master off the edge, right? But it really shouldn't get him in between the tackles too much. Like, you know, from his body frame and stuff, his stature, you want to kind of keep him. His engine runs better when he has clean air. Let me say it like that. Then you got guys like Chris Jones, who, man, he thrives in the trenches. He thrives right in the one technique, the three technique, when his body's all around him. He's so long, he can get in front of the pass or knock down passes. He keeps people off his body frame with his long arms and is able to slide through areas that you don't think he can slide through double teams. He gets the quarterbacks when unexpectedly. He surprises them. It's like, I'm here, and quarterbacks aren't ready for him to be where he is. And then you got guys like Melvin Ingram. So Melvin Ingram is what I call he's a game wrecker. Because he, like, you can block things a certain way, slide protection, we got a man for a man, we account for everybody. But what you can't account for is this game wrecker, which on the third step of your three-step drop, he's where you're trying to plant your foot. He's poking the pocket. That natural crease that you usually step up in, for some reason, he's already been able to dissect the protection, and he knows you want to step up 2 yards to make this throw. And he's depositing a guard, a tackle, right where you want to be as a quarterback. And now you have to throw it off the wrong foot, high. So he doesn't worry about the sacks. He doesn't worry about the numbers. It's like he's going off of a whole nother table of what he's trying to get. He wants to put offensive linemen on their back and create some kind of puncture in the pocket. And when he does that, that's a win. He wants to take somebody's his guard, deposit into the center, let you wrap around and come clean. Yeah, that doesn't count as a pressure for him, but I think he's checking off a whole nother column of effectiveness that I don't think we've seen from a D lineman before. And what it's doing is allowing these other guys to go eat at a high level. And so it's kind of very tough for an offensive line to prepare for a guy who is never in the same spot. He doesn't use the same rush technique over and over. He's not just a long arm guy. He's not a bull, quick swim. He's all of that.
So you're okay with the threat of playing inside and outside?
All of it. Really? All of it. Because I mean,
so you're a fan of him, even though he's been spending more time, obviously, inside lately. But
love it. I think he's an unknown. He's like that. You can't account for him. Because you don't, you watch him on film, you can't tell me before the snap what he's about to do. And I think other players, when you watch enough film of them, whenever they're in a wide nine, they're going to dip and rip off the edge. So you know you're going to get a speed rush. Whenever they tighten it down because they want to give you the long arm, might give you a window rush inside, right? You watch guys over and over again, and sometimes their alignment tells you from a tackle position how this defensive end is going to try to, attack your protection. I think with Melvin Ingram, he's just a mad man. He's just angry. So you know he's going to use violent force. He's going to use he's going to get to a 3 yards in the backfield right in front of the quarterback. He's going to get there in a second and a half. I don't know how he's going to get there, but when I stop the clicker, he's there. He's depositing somebody right where the quarterback wants to throw the ball, and that's the kind of disruption you need. And I think we've been feeding off of it and eating off of it for now the last few weeks.
One guy who's really benefited is Jaren Reed. I had a lot of expectations when he came in here. Obviously, it's money time for Jaren Reed. He comes out of Alabama's run stuffer. Clearly developed that inside pass rush. You know, when he's in Seattle, he and Frank Clark had a good year together there in 2018 with Seattle. But I've noticed he's been showing up the stat sheet, since Ingram's here, right? He gets that sack against the Raiders. He got a half sack. Got one of Jones's, the 3.5 could have been 4. He got the half sack on that deal. How does Ingram make him that much better? Or is it just the ability of Jones playing more inside? Because we're getting more out of Jaren Reed.
Yeah.
He's been there with pressures and everything, but he's showing up more visibly.
Yeah. So when I play special teams, I play with a guy named my man 55 V12, Gary Steeles. You remember Gary Steeles?
West Virginia.
Gary Steeles is a Pro Bowl level.
I think he was.
pro. Yes, West Virginia. Yeah, and Son's there now doing some damage.
Yeah, he is.
But Gary Steeles was a Pro Bowl special teams player. Now, he was not the fastest guy. So when you talk about running down on kickoffs or punts, how does a guy who's not the fastest guy end up being so good, right? Well, what he did was he allowed other people to be the wedge breaker. Let this other guy insert. And he was so masterful about reading blocking techniques and then going to where the return was. He just could read it on the fly. He had like a spider sense where he knew he never got faked out by the counter returns or the reverse. He just knew something about the way that guy was blocking. Oh, it's coming back here. And then he would set himself right inside the numbers, running inside out, make a tackle every time. And so I think that that's what some guys do. Some guys are wedge breakers, and some guys are better at, you know, counter punching. Let everything, you know, blow up, and then let me clean up. And I think maybe, you know, Jerry Reed and some of those guys, they know that Ingram, when the ball is snapped, is like a Tasmanian devil to the offensive line. They don't know who's going to pick him up, who ain't. And all you got to do is be persistent in your effort to get to the quarterback. You will fall into a lot of good plays. The situation is going to be very good for you because of what Melvin Ingram does right at the snap of the ball. Because there is no delay. The word delay in his stunt does not exist. Everything is being done quick, aggressive, physical. Those are the things that characterize how he goes about his business. He's a man. He's a very intense man. I think in one of the interviews they said, "Well, what is your emotional state knowing that you're going to play the Pittsburgh Steelers and possibly play the, you know, the Chargers again?" I don't play with emotion.
I remember that.
Emotion.
What? They asked him what his favorite barbecue was too, which he at least he answered. But
you know what I mean? But that's what, like, he's about his business.
Yeah, he is.
Right?
He reminds me of Bolton's like that too. Ooh, when he talks, he's about business.
Yes. So them two, man, like we got some different type cats to hear that not that our other guys aren't good, but when you playing with those kind of cats, man, it's very hard offensively to be able to create a game plan when the guys on defense aren't doing what you think they're going to do.
This defense has plenty of guys in Canton, Ohio. You think, I've said that I think Chris Jones is the MVP at this point. Offense, defense, doesn't matter. I think Chris Jones is that guy. You may disagree with me or not, I don't know. But he's the best Chief defensive player since who?
Who? Barry?
To have an impact.
I thought Barry was amazing, man. I thought Eric Berry was a guy that was on that same level as a Ed Reed, same level as a Rod Woodson, same level. I mean, I thought Eric Berry, the way he performed and played in this defense that we had here was obviously he wasn't surrounded by a whole bunch of talent in that secondary. I mean, we was maybe lacking in our cornerbacks in most of the years Eric was here, and he still made hay. He still made a lot of play. Not I think about that Falcons game, right? The 2-point, right? I mean, that's kind of instinct and the play level that man came with intensity on a game-by-game basis. Houston, amazing pass rusher. Tomba, amazing pass rusher. DJ, right? Derek Johnson, Mr. Monday, the forever linebacker. I always hear him in the morning calling him the forever linebacker. But DJ,
and Joe Mays too. He's the forever. You're forever linebacker.
You know,
doing
an amazing job. DJ did it. I mean, just being a playmaker for a number of years. I mean, you know, obviously you know, DT and Neil Smith and I mean, a number of guys played this defense, I think, very well. But
DT's the only jersey ever bought. Only one ever.
I mean, that's
only jersey ever bought.
The image I got of DT is sitting in the rain, right? After, like, being exhausted. I think it was that Seattle game, right? The 7 sacks or something like that.
He almost got 8. Dave Craig, right? Yeah.
Sitting on his keister because he's exhausted. He's been chasing that passer over and over again to the tune of 7 sacks in one ball game until he's exhausted. He's just sitting there in the rain and his puddles all around. Like, that to me is the imagery. Of a man that, you know, you can't tell me that he was driven by contract dollars. It's this pure, unadulterated competitiveness. The alpha in him had to come out every snap for him to get that. That's the guy, you know, if you want to watch some game film on how to play the game, I mean, some of those game films you need to really, you know, maybe this generation needs a lot more of that. We talk about effort, attitude, how to hunt, how to get to a ball, how to finish off plays, what it takes to be a champion each and every day. You got to deposit into the today to create a tomorrow. The future, we know there's going to be two teams playing in February for the Lombardi Trophy. But what it takes to get there, nobody knows. Nobody can tell you how many wins in week 12 of the season it's going to take, how much effort it's going to take in week 12 to get you a spot in that game. So all you can do is all you got, give all you can, study, prepare. Right now with the Chiefs on the bye week, rest, recover, regenerate, rejuvenate, all those things that the trainers and Rick Burkhalter and the guys are telling you to do.
Don't eat too much.
Don't eat. Take it easy on Turkey Day, right? Don't overdo it on Turkey Day, right? You still got a job left to do, but having the luxury of getting some skeletons of a game plan together, being able to get together with some other linebackers, and you know, if I was Bolton and I was Willie Gay, I wouldn't go home on Thanksgiving. I would ask Hitchens, hey, can I come over and watch? Can we watch that Denver game together? Like, we know we got some calls that are live every week. Let's just call, make the calls. Over One Thunder, over, you know.
And Melvin over too?
I mean, I already know what I'm getting. Again, it's just as dangerous for the offense as for defense. So having him come over, he can't tell you what he's going to do. So why should we? I mean, he's going to do something destructive, and he's going to create a lot of confusion, and you just got to be ready to play whatever gap he ain't filling. And that's a beautiful – to me, I would take that every time. Give me the Tasmanian devil in front of me. I'm a great enough athlete to be able to play off of somebody who's destructive and aggressive, rather than play with somebody who even blinks or hesitates. Don't hesitate, because then I don't know what you're doing. When the ball is hiked, let's be aggressive. Let's play downhill. Let's make plays. More than likely, if we're playing that way, and we're forcing the offense to throw the ball a little bit earlier. That's what happened, and we want to talk. Play one. First play of the game against the Dallas Cowboys, they tried a double move. It was open, wide open. Dak missed him. Dak missed him because the pocket wasn't as clean as he – it's not just a miss. You know, somebody fell in front of him a little bit. So the aggressiveness of somebody else saved C. Ward from giving up a touchdown, saved our whole defense from giving up a first touchdown. But you got to know you got that. You got to know that that's going to be – that aggressiveness is – even if they did get that play, who cares? We not stopping coming after you because we gave up a double move or we gave up a big play or something. Like, we got to know from the first snap that we in this for the entire game, and we ain't going to stop hunting. We ain't going to stop coming after you. No matter what the scoreboard look like, no matter what happens on the play before, we are hunting your running backs, your quarterbacks. You run boot, you run quarterback sneak, you want quarterback sweep against us, we're going to put your quarterback out for the whole season.
We're talking to the former Richmond Spider, Sean Barber. There you go, fourth-round pick of Washington. We got more to talk about this defense. We'll play the hits. It'll be Sean Barber-related hits, I'm sure. And I need to get into LeJarius Sneed. We haven't talked about him yet, but I want to do that for sure. We'll do that next.
Got to get angry. You got to get mean. That's the only way you can play.
You're listening to former Chiefs linebacker Sean Barber on The Drive, brought to you by Own KC.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.